Today on A New Beginning, a story you'll never forget. It's the multifaceted story of Louis Zamperini. In 1936, he ran in the Olympics in front of Adolf Hitler. Not long after, swept up into World War II, his plane crashed in the Pacific.
So we hit the water at an angle about 45 degrees. The plane just blew up into pieces. So I knew this was it. I'm going to die.
He survived and drifted on a life raft for 47 days, facing sunburn, starvation, and sharks.
All the sharks coming around, I thought, don't make a sound. For the next 10 minutes, they kept trying to jump in the raft and kept jabbing with the oar.
One day, he and his raft mate spotted a plane.
And waving our shirts, and the plane came down low, and I thought, well, they're going to wave at us.
Surviving the gunfire, he was taken to a Japanese concentration camp run by the heartless Matsuhiro Watanabe, nicknamed the Bird. And that's just part of the life story of the man we'll hear today, the story of the late Louis Zamperini, in just a moment. Pastor Greg Laurie says we shouldn't underestimate what prayer can do in people's lives.
There is power when Christians pray together. Jesus said, if any two of you will agree together as touching anything, it will be done by the Father in heaven.
Are you praying for those who don't yet know the Lord?
When you are praying for people to come to faith in Jesus Christ, you're praying according to the will of God.
So let us invite you to pray for others through our prayer campaign with Harvest America, investing just an hour in prayer.
It's 60 days of prayer, and our goal is to have Christians across the United States praying every hour for Harvest America and for our nation.
Pick the hour you can pray and sign up at harvestamerica.com.
So engage in this 60 days of prayer and commit yourself to fill one of those hours where you will be bringing these prayer needs before the throne of God.
Invest an hour in someone's eternity. Sign up at harvestamerica.com. By the way, you can find a Harvest America host location near you online at harvestamerica.com. If there isn't one near you, here's your opportunity to host Harvest America yourself. It's not too late. Louis Zamperini was an American hero. It's a story told in the bestseller by Laura Hillenbrand called Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption, which we'll tell you more about later. Louis went home to the Lord at the age of 97 last July. But we're celebrating Louis' life today by revisiting a conversation Pastor Greg Laurie had with Louis not long ago. Here's Pastor Greg to explain how he first heard of Louis.
I received a copy of his book called Unbroken and read it and thought it was one of the most powerful stories I'd ever read. I mean, it's an adventure story. It's a prisoner of war story. It's a story of a man who endured incredible torture. But then it's a story of conversion as Louis Zamperini comes to faith at the Billy Graham Crusade in L.A. Here's a man who ran in the Olympics and shook hands with Adolf Hitler, a man who was shot down over the Pacific Ocean and spent 47 days at sea in a life raft, a man who suffered through a Japanese concentration camp, a man who turned to alcohol, a man whose marriage was unraveling, a man who found hope in a relationship with Jesus Christ. And I think as you hear his story, you're going to be blown away. So get ready to be inspired as you hear the life story of Louis Zamperini.
Louis Zamperini, welcome to Harvest. We're privileged to have you here tonight. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege. Looking forward to it.
Well, right. Louis, you had a couple of things you wanted to say. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've had a lot of great races in my life, exciting races, but I'd say the most emotional run of my life was in Nagano, Japan during the Winter Olympics in 98, where CBS did a 45-minute video carrying the Olympic torch in Noetsu, Japan, and carrying the torch alongside of my former slave labor camp. It was very emotional. The mayor of Noetsu had sent me an email and he said, when you come to Japan to carry the torch, we will line the streets and cheer you on. And it wasn't a place you could stand. It was just jammed for a mile. And then he said, can you come before the city council and answer questions? I said, yeah. Well, the final question came from him. And he said, tell me, Mr. Zamperini, did anything good come out of your being a prisoner of war for 2.5 years in Japan? I said, yeah, it prepared me for 55 years of married life. I was going to say it enhanced my tolerance for pain. They didn't want to hurt his feelings. But the truth of the matter is, when you look back, all things do work together for good, because if the bird hadn't been so vicious toward me for so long, I would not have had post-traumatic stress as I did, and probably wouldn't have became an alcoholic, and I probably wouldn't have gone to the Billy Graham meeting. So yes, I can thank Mrs. Shiro Watanabe for actually pointing me to the cross.
Yes, amen. Well, Lou, you were born where?
Olean, New York.
But you spent a good deal of your childhood in Torrance, California, correct?
Right.
And you, your brother, your older brother, Pete, was a runner, and he got you running, and pretty soon you got a nickname. Do you remember what your nickname was?
Well, they call it the Torrance Tornado.
The Torrance Tornado.
Yeah.
But you were also a little bit of a hooligan, weren't you? You got into some trouble and the police would chase you. Well, why did you get in trouble all the time?
Well, I was really a rotten kid, and my brother tolerated me and he tried to help me. And finally, the chief of police brought me to the jail and he showed me two guys locked up. And he said, someday you're going to be behind those bars. And it really shook me up. And my brother said, well, we got to get him out for some kind of sport. And the chief said, well, may I suggest running? We've been chasing him all over town for years.
So you started running and you started winning races, and soon you qualified to go to the 1936 Olympics in Germany and run in an Olympic event. And you ran so fast in that event, though you got eighth place, you ran so fast, Adolf Hitler wanted to meet you, and you shook hands with Hitler.
Yeah, it's amazing that I even finished the race. I gained 14 pounds. Anytime you get on a boat, you're going to gain weight.
Yeah.
I couldn't lose the weight in time. Besides that, they had all these different cuisines for the different nations, and I had to try them all. So I couldn't keep up the pace. The last lap, I was about 50 yards behind the winners and in a pack of runners. And I finally decided to do what my brother told me to do. The last lap comes, everybody's tired, but isn't 1 minute of pain worth a lifetime of glory? So I sprinted the whole last lap in 56 seconds. Grandstand people stood up. I caught Hitler's attention, and then the next day I was asked to meet Hitler by, I think it was Göring. And I just reached up, touched his hand, and he said, through an interpreter, he said, the boy was a fast finish. That was it.
And we had no idea really who this man was going to turn into at that point.
Well, we know all of Germany was military, even the Boy Scouts, so we knew he was up to something, but we figured he wanted to take a country,
yeah,
not the world.
Exactly.
But then, and I think most of the world knew it, but nobody wanted to get involved,
yeah,
until it was too late.
So while you were there in Germany, you saw a Nazi flag on a pole that you wanted to get for yourself, and did you get it?
Well, yes, because all the answers were collecting souvenirs, and with my teenage pastime, it was easy for me to pick up stuff.
How high up was this flag? This is the actual flag right here.
Probably about 8 feet on the wall in front of the chancellery. And I was very careful to time the guards as they marched back and forth.
The actual flag.
But I couldn't reach it when I got to it, and that killed time. And I, when the guards started to scream at me, I jumped as high as I could and clutched it in my hand, ripped it from the pole, and started to run, which I... Then I heard a shot.
Haltensee!
A rifle shot, and I heard the words, Haltensee, Haltensee. And I didn't need an interpreter. And the guards came up and spun me around rather rudely until they saw the Olympic flag in my pocket and the American flag, and then they were more gentle. And then the one guard asked me, he spoke very poor English, but I could understand him.
Why did you tear down this swastika?
Now, we had two Jewish athletes on the team. I think they might have thought I was one of those. And I just said, I just wanted to take the flag home to America to always remind me of the wonderful time I had in your country.
So World War II has broken out. You've enlisted to serve in the military, and you were shot down over the Pacific.
Well, actually, we weren't shot down. We were searching for another plane that had crashed north of Palmyra, and they assured us the plane passed inspection, but nobody wanted to fly it. It was what they call a musher. And one motor quit, and we have to feather the motor. And the engineer, brand new engineer, rushed up to feather the motor, and they feathered the wrong motor. And the plane wouldn't hardly fly on four, and with one motor out, it was dropping already. With two out on the same side, that wing dropped, because you're giving full power on the right side to try to keep aloft. So we hit the water at an angle of about 45 degrees. The plane just blew up into pieces. And I don't know how anybody survived, but the pilot and tail gunner were blown free of the wreckage. And I was trapped in the waist section. My job is to get a raft and stand behind the tripod of the machine gun mount. And now before the plane hits, you want to duck down low with the life raft against your shoulder. And I ended up under the tripod, severely wedged in and painfully wedged in, where I couldn't move. I doubt if four men could have broken me loose from that position. I was just brutally wedged in. And then to make matters worse, the tail snapped off and the control wires go within an inch and a half of the tripod. Now those are very springy wires, and they coiled up all around me. And so I'm completely entangled in wires around my hopeless situation. So I knew this was it. I'm going to die. And as the plane sank, I felt my ears pop, so I knew I was down 20 feet. And then I kept sinking deeper and deeper. My head started to get painful. And then I felt a sharp pain in my forehead. And I don't know how deep I was down, maybe 100 or 200 feet. And then I lost consciousness. Now, before I lost consciousness, I prayed in my mind, my heart, and my body, God help me. That's all I could say. Then I'm out cold. And the next thing is I'm completely freed and loosened from wires and the tripod. And for one brief second, I just thought this is the afterlife. And then I realized I was fighting for my breath. And so now my body's buoyant and the plane is sinking fast. And I reached around in my USC ring, snagged onto the waist window. And the pressure of my body floating upward and the plane going down, I bent the ring over and cut into the bone. I couldn't let go, thank God. So I pulled myself down, arched my back out the window, took skin off my back, and then it seemed like forever getting to the surface, swallowing gas, oil, and blood. And got to the surface, and there's my two buddies hanging onto a gas tank. And that was probably the nearest death I'd ever been in my life. And I've had two narrow escapes.
Yes. You were at sea, adrift at sea for, was it 47 days? And
Here's a description from your book written by Laura Hildebrand about what happened. Looking over the side of the raft, they saw it. Swelling up from under the water came a leviathan, a vast white mouth, a broad back parting the surface, and a long dorsal fin, ghostly in the moonlight. The animal was some 20 feet long, more than three times the length of the raft. Louis recognized its features from his survival school training. It was a great white shark. So that wasn't the only shark. The sharks were circling. They were coming up underneath the raft, and pretty soon they were coming into the raft. But you took care of one of those sharks, or a few of them,
yeah,
didn't you?
The thing is, I was never scared on the raft except for that great white, because he actually, we were trying to sleep. But we put four inches of water in the raft because our bodies warmed that a little bit, so it's better than the ocean. The shark came up, slapped us on the bottom, lifted us out of the water. Three guys in a raft. I thought it was a submarine. And then I saw the shark swimming around. I thought that, don't make a sound. Now, the shark was like a human being. Every time he went to the long way of the raft, he would take his tail and flip water on us to see what we were. He did that about 8 or 10 times. And we just sat motionless, no sound, and he finally disappeared, just like he came. And that was scary. Because yeah. he was big enough to bite the raft in two and take us all.
But you had to eat, and these sharks were trying to eat you, and so you decided to turn the tables on the sharks, and
yeah, well,
you ate them.
That was really ironic. The other two guys were sleeping, and I was awake, and I kept watching these. There's always two sharks for some reason, and they kept circling around, circling. That's all they do. And so I thought, well, trying to be like one with nature, if I could touch one of them. So I put my hand over his head when he went by. My hand went over his dorsal fin, and I thought, hey, that's neat. Has it been at one with nature, as they say? And I did that to both sharks twice. And then all of a sudden, and this was unusual, it never happened before, they both disappeared. There was always two sharks. Nothing scared them away, but these two disappeared. Now I'm on my knees looking to see where they are, and this head comes up out of the water, mouth open. And it was like a demon out of hell. I mean, it just scared me. And I inadvertently put my hands up, but I had it high enough so the shark's mouth is, when he opens his mouth, his snoot is about a foot ahead of his mouth, and he turns that up. Well, I got him on the top of the nose and pushed him back in, and then the tail gunner couldn't figure out what was happening. He woke up, grabbed an oar. I grabbed an oar, and I tell you, for the next 10 minutes, they kept trying to jump in the raft and kept jabbing them with the oar. And they finally gave up, and they left. Well, what that did to me, it made me really mad. And being Italian, I wanted to get even. And so I decided to make them part of our food chain. And well, this was, biting off more than we could chew, but so I waited for a small shark. The next day, a 5-footer came by, and I thought, well, I thought small, but I'll try my luck. So when he came by the raft, slowly circling, I reached in and grabbed him by the tail, but I didn't get his tail out of the water fast enough, and he pulled me in, and I got out fast, yeah. And so then I waited the next day, a 4-footer was there, and I thought, well, he's still pretty big, but I'll make a try. So we have a parachute flare cartridge. When you pull a shark out of the water, immediately their mouth opens. And so I said, I'm going to pull his tail out quickly, pull him into the raft, and before he bites the raft or any of us, put the cartridge in his mouth. And it happened perfectly. I pulled him in, and the pilot shoved the casing into his mouth, and he clamped down on it and wouldn't let go. I took the brass mirror, and I made three teeth, big teeth marks on the edge of the mirror. It took me about 10 or 15 minutes to open a hole in the belly of that shark. They are tough. So we had a lovely dinner of raw liver. Then about a week later, and we caught another shark, a little smaller, 4-footer. So we had two luscious meals on the raft.
Well, as you can imagine, there's much more to the story of Louis Zamperini. Next time here on A New Beginning, we'll hear more of this interview as Pastor Greg Laurie talks to him about his rescue from the raft, only to wind up in a Japanese concentration camp. And after the war ended, he found himself in a prison of a different kind, alcoholism and post-traumatic stress disorder, until he hears the preaching of a young man named Billy Graham. That's all coming tomorrow, along with some important words from Pastor Greg about the value of forgiveness. Well, Pastor Greg, we're making available Louis's life story, artfully told in Laura Hillenbrand's bestseller, Unbroken.
Right.
But before his passing, you got to spend some time with Louis on a few occasions.
Mm-hmm.
What's one thing that the rest of us maybe wouldn't know about this man?
Well, we had Louis out here at the church. In fact, my office where we talked is right next door to where we are at this moment. And so when we came to the church, we have a long set of stairs, actually two flights, and then we have an elevator. And considering that Louis was in his 90s at that point, I said, Louis, would you like to use the elevator? He said, no, I'll use the stairs. And here's what surprised me. He got up the stairs as fast as my young son, Jonathan. That guy had so much energy. And as I would go over his story and I would ask him details about it, I was fascinated by the attention to detail that Zamperini retained in his mind. He remembered everything so vividly. And I think that is why this book is so effective, because Laura spent hours and hours interviewing Louis for the writing of this book. And so she was able to get the details, the things you would not normally remember that Louis does remember. So as you read this book, you can taste it, you can feel it, you can smell it. It's like you're there. I'm telling you, this is one of the best books you will ever read. If this was a novel, it would be a fantastic story, but this is a true story of a genuine American hero and a committed follower of Jesus Christ. You have never read a story like this before, and I know you'll be glad you got your hands on a copy of Unbroken, the story of Louis Zamperini.
Yeah, and it's our privilege to make this book available to you, to thank you for your donation in support of the work we do here at Harvest Crusades and A New Beginning. Without that help, we simply couldn't bring you these daily studies. So thanks for your generosity. And with your contribution, be sure to ask for this best-selling book called Unbroken. You can call us at 1-800-821-3300, 1-800-821-3300, or write A New Beginning, Box 4000, Riverside, California, 92514. And you can take care of the details online at harvest.org. And that website is also where you can connect with free MP3s of any of Pastor Greg's messages. The fastest way to find them is to go to radio.harvest.org and look for the archives on the right. Download as many as you'd like. Pastor Greg Laurie invites you to use Harvest America to introduce friends and family to Christ.
And the last two Harvest America events, wait for it, 30,000 people have responded to the invitation.
And it's as close as your front room.
Harvest America is going to take place in Dallas on October 5th, but it will be beamed to churches, theaters, front rooms, all around the United States and abroad. It's like having a crusade wherever you want it to be.
Invite some friends and family to enjoy the music and hear the message.
You can have it in your front room. Put it on your big screen TV. This signal goes out and you can pull it down wherever you want. And think of someone you know that is not yet a Christian that could watch this with you.
And we'll provide all the resources and tools you'll need to make it effective.
This can be a fun event, but we get serious when the gospel message is proclaimed.
Find out more at harvestamerica.com. And by the way, you can find a Harvest America host location near you online at harvestamerica.com. If there isn't one near you, well, here's your opportunity to host Harvest America yourself. It's not too late. Next time, the can't-miss second half of the story of Louis Zamperini. Join us here on A New Beginning.